Members, we'd like to get started today. We have three bills that we need to try and get through. We are not at quorum yet, but we will get rolling on the bills that are before us and call us officially to order once we reach that. So if members could have a seat, we will get started. First up on the agenda, we have Representative Mullery's bill. Representative Mullery, if you want to come forward and introduce your bill, and then we will officially move it when we are at quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure where my witness is this morning. She was just over here until about 7 o'clock last night on another bill as a witness. Members, this is a bill that was first brought to me by two different police liaison officers at Patrick Henry High School, and they brought up the fact that a lot of youth get into trouble just doing what might be called dumb things or doing what's going on, and they don't understand the consequences to them either then or later in life. And these officers said that quite often they would, let's say, I think they're both retired, so I can say that they didn't report what should have been reported because of they knew that what bad consequences were going to happen to the kids if they did, not just for immediacy, but for their entire life. As we all know here, we're looking at the collateral consequences in the laws, which absolutely ban people from jobs later in life in Minnesota and many other states just because they've done certain actions, which may seem inconsequential to us and especially to a teenager. And so they were the ones that actually suggested that this should be taught in schools, and since then it's become a very important issue to a number. I'm on the Juvenile Justice Coalition, Juvenile Justice Legislative Group. I'm not worth the Juvenile Justice Advisory Council, which is the governor's appointed group, but they are backing it, and if my witness comes, she's one of their officers. Basically, that's what it is. It would require middle school students to be taught about the basically a little bit about the criminal and juvenile justice systems, but the big thing is that they'd be taught about the consequences of either delinquency or criminal actions, and also the effects of drug laws. Then there'd be some issues related to gun violence, although that is not the important part. The consequences of selling drugs, you can be carried over to where you can't get a lot of jobs. And so that's the purpose of the bill, and it would be to, I think they'd work with probably, I think, to set up these standards, they'd work with the law enforcement, but especially also with job counselors and youth counselors for that.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. We are at quorum right now, so we will officially call us to order. And then may I have Representative Newton, will you move the minutes from our February 24th meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of the February 24th meeting.
Any discussion on the minutes? All right, hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 24th are approved. Representative Mullery, I will officially move your bill here. The chair moves that House File 58 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the K-12 Finance Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really important for a lot of inner city kids that we're finding a lot of youth on the north side are being getting into something that didn't seem like anything very major or even necessarily wrong, and suddenly they can't find employment. It affects their employment a lot. We have somewhere roughly around, the estimates are around 30% unemployment in the people of color's communities. And it's not just here. I received an email from Northfield about what a great idea this bill was, and it spoke about the fact that a certain person in the Washington County Public Defender's Office has given some talks to youth in schools on this, but that most schools just don't seem to be interested or understand the importance. And yet, when you compare what especially my friends who are in the middle grades, teachers, what people remember from those years that helps them later in life is pretty minimal compared to how important this is to their later life. So I think it's something we definitely need to start doing.
Do you have some questions? Representative Nornes?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mulry, you're suggesting that it be taught in 6th, 7th, and 8th grades, all three grade levels, or just one of the three? It would seem to me that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Nornes, I think one of the three would be sufficient. I think that's to be decided by the Department of Education with working with those other groups that I said.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I was just going to suggest a field trip to a prison might be a good thing to put into that curriculum.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mulry.
Representative Nornes, that's possible. I think what would be probably more effective would be talking to many of the people that I've talked to that are young adults that can't get a job anywhere because of something they did and it was really stupid. I think that might even sink in a lot more.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mulry, you indicated the department was supportive of this legislation. Is that correct?
Representative Mulry.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brenner, the department hasn't said anything about this legislation.
Okay. All right.
Representative Brenner?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mulry, then my concern here is I understand the social motives for the legislation, but I'm very concerned about the mandate aspect because we're in a time when schools are asking us to revisit a whole series of mandates because we're not funding them appropriately and they can't meet the mandates that we've already are requiring of them. So is this another unfunded mandate in the sense of another piece of curriculum they have to find a place to put? And it's not clear to me where it would fit in the middle school curriculum. I think I need to hear some testimony from, you know, some middle school staff to understand where it might most appropriately be placed. If it's a part of an existing course, it's a whole other issue than if it has to be placed into an English course or a, you know, history course, or where in the middle school curriculum does it appropriately fit? So I have questions about the logistics and the cost factor.
Representative Mulry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brainerd, I've talked to a lot of teachers at inner city schools about this, and they think it's very important that it should be fitted in, and that it really wouldn't require that much time to do the basics, which is, I don't know that some of these things are that important that are listed here. I think that the facts of how you can get in trouble, how the system works, and the consequences of that are really important to get forth. And I'm not sure that it would take more than a week or so.
Follow-up, Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear what you're saying, Representative Mulry, but you're talking about it's the import in urban schools, and there certainly can be outstate schools that also would benefit from it. But when you're talking about standards, it has to be something that is evenly required of the population from an academic point of view, has the appropriate benefit across the grade level, that professionals in a certain you know, academic discipline recognize this as a standard. That's different than content that's important for social goals. And standards are different things, and I'm concerned about putting this at the level of a standard without much further work and voices from disciplinary experts.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize for being a little bit late, Representative Mullery, and maybe if you already covered this, but are there any districts right now that have implemented this program? Is there a pilot or an example curriculum? And if so, is there kind of a positive outcome to that? Do we have some experience with this?
Representative Mullery.
Chairman, Representative Downey, not that I know of. It's coming from teachers in the schools and liaison officers and job placement people and people in probation and different things like that. A lot of different groups say that this is needed.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mullery, I want to follow on somewhat with what Representative Breinert has here. And I know that we have curriculum review committees in my district. They tend to run every 5 years. They look over the curriculum and rewrite curriculum for our social studies or whatever class they're teaching. And I think that might fit better if, rather than having a mandate saying you have to do this in starting in a certain school year, but to give districts permission to incorporate this at the time that they next review their curriculum for social studies. And the other point I'd like to make is if this is primarily an issue for Minneapolis schools, they can implement this on their own with their curriculum. They don't necessarily need a state standard to do it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Murray.
I think that after hearing from, for instance, JJAC and others have representative all across the state. I believe that Sarah Dixon's from Duluth. So there's a lot of representatives on these groups from around the state that feel it's needed everywhere. There may be more youth at risk in the inner cities and in the suburbs. If anyone thinks that there aren't problems in the suburbs, good morning, because you're not awake.
Yeah.
This is definitely needed for everyone because youth are getting into problems all over the state. There may be more in certain areas of a concentration, but they're getting into things that they don't realize all over the state. And that's what, when I go to these meetings on juvenile justice, it's the same way. Just I came from in the fall, I was down for a 4-day conference in Illinois, and it's not just the Chicago area, it's all over the state that they have these problems.
I think that this time, is there somebody from the Department of Education that would like to make any statements on the bill, and specifically any questions or concerns? Please state your name for the record.
I'm Amy Walston. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. And I just wanted to state that our only concerns with the bill would be if there was a fiscal cost to it. If anyone's got any particular questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so question to the department here. I'm very empathetic to what Representative Mullery is trying to do, and I suspect that that's true across the table as well. What I'm not fully aware is to what degree does the legislature dictate in statute through the standards revision process? To what degree do we dictate specific curricular content directions to the department? Is this something that we do normally, regularly? Is this a rare thing that we would do? And I sure would like to hear the department's sense of what's the wisdom of doing that as opposed to leaving state statute broad for the department to be able to do its revision of standards.
Ms. Wallstein?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, there are other places within the statute regarding standards where there are particular items that are requested to be in the review cycle for the standards, such as technology, career, college and career readiness, and then contributions of American Indians. So those are places where the legislature has directed particular components to be embedded within the standards. But generally, I believe that the department would feel it is better for us to have a broad leeway with the development of the content with our standards committee.
And then, Mr. Chair,
hello,
and this is probably a question for later on, assuming the bill moves forward, so I won't belabor it, but the issue of the fiscal note, it seems to me that Representative Mullery has structured the language in a way that the department's attention to this issue would be directed at the point of the revision of standards. And so there would be, it seems to me that that begs no additional resources, because at that point the department would be revising the standards as well. And I noted that in your comments you weren't quite sure whether there would be a fiscal note related to this. But I just wanted to point out that I don't think Representative Mullery's language here is asking the department to engage in an activity over and above what it's scheduled to do at the point of the revision of the standards.
Ms. Wallstein?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I believe you're correct in that. I think that the cost would be more of a local impact to school districts that would not have this curriculum in place, would have to then develop it.
Thank you.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Mariani did hit on one of my concerns, but I am surprised that the department hasn't taken a more active position on the issue, because of the very nature of the standards that, you know, I mean, you probably can't answer this question, but I would think the department would want broader input before being directed this specifically in a standards direction. Again, curriculum is quite different, and I think Representative Newton's position is probably the more logical here, that this should go to curriculum in districts and can be already taken into social studies standards as they broadly exist. But I would think the department would be uncomfortable with this level of specificity and intrusion in the standards making process. And I recognize we're the legislature and we make laws, but hopefully we do that with some consistency and rationality. You may not be able to comment on that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have concerns about it going into the standards, but it seems like curriculum to me, and I'm wondering if it couldn't already fit in the curriculum under one of the social studies standards. I haven't looked at the social studies standards, but I'm just wondering if this could be part of the curriculum that could be included under one of the standards. And and I don't know if you have the answer to that, but you know the standards are pretty broad, and the curriculum is open. It seems like this could be incorporated, and I'm not sure then if you need legislation, certainly not for statute, but I don't know, some information going to teachers or some other way of approaching getting this. I think it's important. I do think it's important. But I'm trying to figure out how you get it into the hands of teachers and have them teach this as part of the curriculum.
Representative Mullery, would you like to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I've never been on the Education Committee. I don't get into this. I asked for it written up by House staff. I didn't get into whether the word should be standards or curriculum. I know that when I was at the Juvenile Justice down in Chicago this fall, that they were talking about requiring this in schools, and different states that were there talked about doing that. So I don't know technically what word they're using. I just know that they're doing it and finding that it's very important.
Any other questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 58? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion that House File 58 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance with further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign?
No.
The motion does not pass. And we will move on to Representative Fritz, House File 2962. Welcome, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have some treats for the teachers. I asked the page to give those some peppermint patties for all of you. This is the first time I've appeared before you, Mr. Chairman, so I wanted to sweeten you up a little.
Oh, breakfast.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Thank you.
All right. The chair moves that House File 2962 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the K-12 Finance Division. Representative Fritz, would you please present your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The bill that I have, I'll give you a little description of why I have it. In this wonderful position that I have as a state legislator for my community, I have the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and the Blind schools. And after session each year, I'm invited to go to their graduation exercises. And while I was at the academy graduation exercise for the blind last year, a mother came to me, and it's, first of all, it's the most humbling experience I think I've ever had to watch these students who are blind or deaf and multiply handicapped as well receive their diploma, and after years of training and education in our academies, it is such a feeling of total overwhelm with the accomplishments of these young people and the good work that the state academies does down there. So if you ever are in the area, please stop by and tour them. I have with me today Superintendent Linda Mitchell of the academies and Billy Ward, who is the special education director for the academies. But getting back to my little story, the mother came to me and said she never knew that these schools existed. She was from Wisconsin. She heard about the school for the deaf and blind at a Vikings Green Bay football game. So, of course, that just got my Irish up. And she said she never knew that because her child lived in Wisconsin, they did not know that there was a school such as this that even existed. And however, even at that, and her child certainly needed to be there, she couldn't be there because she lived in Wisconsin. So that has been a problem that we've had for quite some time. So we have some language here that would give it these folks the admission trial placement for 60 days in the academies, and we would be amending the statute. We have met with the state, with the Attorney General. We have met with the department that helped us craft this and the special education people, so we've done our homework. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Superintendent Linda Mitchell.
Please state your name for the record and proceed, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. I am Linda Mitchell, the superintendent of the State Academies in Faribault, and thank you, Patty, for introducing us and giving you a little bit of background. Would like to explain how students access the academies, because I think it's important to understand that at this point in time, students come to us through their school district of residence. We really don't have control of where that process starts. This is an IEP meeting between the school district of residence and the family. And if they determine that the state academies may be an appropriate placement, then we get invited to the meeting to participate. At this point in time, the reason we are asking that this language be added is not only for students from Wisconsin, and we do have out-of-state placement, so they can access us, but we're really looking at this as a matter of fairness for the parents, because right now, if a school district says, no, you can't go to the academies, or no, we have an appropriate placement here, then they have to go through the special ed due process and argue and fight to get their children to be able to attend the academies. And I can tell you over the years, that is emotionally tiring. Some parents just give up and say, fine. We also get phone calls from families who say, okay, we're moving to Minnesota. Where do we have to move so that our children can go to the academies? Because some school districts are more willing to allow their students to go than others. Now, having said that, and yes, we did, we met with the Department of Education folks to make sure that this language we were putting in would be appropriate. We're not trying to sidestep the school districts. We work with the school districts all the time. We are invited to the table, and for the students who are at the academies right now, that has been an agreed-upon decision by the families, the school districts of residence, and the state academy staff. What we're asking for, and we believe in Minnesota, where it seems that parents have choice for their children to go to school, they can go to charter schools, they can go to private schools, they can go to public schools, they can open enroll. But right now, they can't go to the state academies unless the school district agrees that they can. What we would like to be able to do is say, if children meet criteria for deafness or blindness, that they at least be allowed a 60-day trial. Now, we're not saying leave the school districts out of this. At some point, you know, after the 60-day trial, we are going to be sitting down to say, yeah, we agree this is an appropriate placement, or no, we don't. So we're not changing the options that are already there for enrollment, but we do think it would be fair for parents to have a say and at least be able to attempt a trial placement. That's really what this language would do. I have to also say that we recognize this is a double-edged sword. There may be students that we don't necessarily think are appropriate, but they will have the option to come for a 60-day placement. At the end of that 60-day placement, if we disagree, if the parents think, nope, this is where we want them to be, and we disagree, at that point, the stay-put clause of special education due process would go into effect, and until that was resolved, the child would stay at the academies. Questions?
Questions from members? Representative Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is an interesting concept. I'm a little curious as to the 60 days. Schools typically run on quarters, and I'm wondering for a student's transferability back and forth between districts, if a quarter doesn't make more sense rather than 60 days, or what kind of thought went into choosing the 60 days?
Well, and actually, I don't disagree with that, Mr. Chair and committee members. What we had done was taken language, and there used to be years ago in the special ed process a 30-day trial placement. We doubled that when we started talking about this just because we really didn't feel like 30 days was long enough. But whether or not it's a quarter or whether or not it's 60 days, I don't know that we would have great concerns about lengthening that. I think you'd always have issues with, quite honestly, schools are not on the same schedules, so one quarter starts at one time and somebody else's ends at a different time. So we may never be able to match it perfectly, but certainly wanted it to be a long enough period of time that we felt like we were able to do a decent evaluation of it.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Mitchell. I don't know a whole lot about this area of policy and law, but my understanding is that right now the process in place here, and I get the argument about school choice, but we're talking about special education here. My understanding is the process involves, as you indicated, the district, the parents of the child, the IEP team to make a determination about a best placement, and then have that be consistent with the IEP with the IEP for the student. And so I'm a little concerned about us starting to move slowly away from that sort of proven process that provides all sorts of balance in the best interest of the child. And I'm not at all, maligning the academy, which I think highly of, and I think everyone here does. But it seems to me that given what you just said, that, so after the, 60-day period of time, that we would essentially get back to a, my words, a regular, normal, determination process. But as I look at the language in the bill on page 2, on lines 2.1 to 2.3, it doesn't say that. What it says is that after the trial placement, the academy staff must meet with the child's parents to determine the appropriateness of the academies. And it seems to me that that still continues then in place, this different way of doing things. And I'm all for parental, responsibility and ownership over these issues. But it seems to me that this continues to avoid the district IEP team parent process. And I'm wondering if perhaps we do this, whether or not we should reintroduce that language to be very specific about what happens after the trial placement.
Comments, Ms. Mitchell?
Mr. Chair and committee members, and I don't disagree, I'm not sure we know how to write the language. I think we probably have made an assumption here, for those of us who are kind of right here in the midst of the trees, because those children are still, they still belong to the school district. We have had this philosophical discussion in the past about whose child is it. The child comes to the academies, if we cannot provide the appropriate placement, we don't then turn around and spend money to put the child in a different place. The child still goes back to the school district of residence, so they don't ever really become anybody's except theirs. So I would understand that, and I'm not sure how you would put it in here, but even as you talk about the discussion at the end of the trial placement, that school district is still responsible for that child.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Mitchell, so I'm hearing the intent here, which I think is consistent with how things are done in the state of Minnesota, for lack of a better. And so I think what I'd like to do is perhaps work with council to work on a little bit of language with Representative Fritz that would be very specific. In the law, we need to be as clear as possible about these things.
Right.
So Representative Fritz, I'll work on some possible language here and offer it up in a few minutes.
Thank you.
And in the meantime, we have a couple of questions. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is along the same lines of the clarity of the language, but in the earlier part when, let's say I'm line 121, a parent may submit an application, then after completing the application process, it says the child may attend the academy. Well, it doesn't say anything about the capacity for accepting or rejecting that application. So is the parent's assumption going to be they're entitled to that 60-day trial period if they apply? Because this language does not indicate that there'll be a decision-making process. So that concerns me. The capacity for rejecting the application isn't in statute, and so therefore I think you'd have some legal liability in that process.
Ms. Mitchell?
Mr. Chair and committee members, and I would agree, what we are looking at and what we were really hanging our hat on was the 1.22 meets disability criteria. Now, we would be the first to say that that in and of itself doesn't make the academies the most appropriate placement. But it does give students who are either deaf or blind the potential to attend for the trial placement.
Follow-up, Representative Brenner.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if this is something that we would want reviewed by legal counsel also, because my concern is that it's a very open-ended process, and you're actually indicating to the parent that if they apply and meet disability requirements, they will indeed be entitled to the 60-day trial period, period. Otherwise, there would be some legal liability. So I'm not uncomfortable with the language of the statute not being specific enough to your intent here.
Another question, Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bryant just kind of answered the question or asked the question I was wondering about. But I did notice, too, it may be a small point on 1.21 and then on 2.2, we have the word parent, which is singular. Is there any concern that you might have that we would have, for example, a disagreement among parents? And that one parent would make this application in opposition to the view of another parent? Those kinds of issues. Should it be parent in S, in parentheses, maybe?
Ms. Mitchell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have not had that experience. I hope we don't. But in essence, it... Even as you say, parents, it may very well be parents slash and or guardians. I don't know that we got that specific, but certainly adding an S to parents would not be would not change things for us.
Representative Peterson. Follow up, Representative Benson.
Our advice over here says that in statute it doesn't matter too much, I guess, apparently.
But okay.
It's just we're in such a litigious society now that I was concerned. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, it's kind of following up on what's already been talked about in terms of the IEP discussion before going, and then it isn't saying here that there will be one, you know, even after the 60-day period, even if that is legal, I'm not sure. And then, what if the team then, there's a disagreement? Are we going to be then ending up in litigation? I mean, you know, I think it needs to, I would think that at least you do need to check with counsel about it, because even if they've done the 60-day, let's say they've done their 60 days and you decide that the child is appropriate, and then you have the IEP hearing, and the school says, we don't agree with you. You know, where is that?
Mr. Chair and committee members, and I think that's part of the reason maybe we haven't written language in here, because we are not changing the special ed process. That would not change. If there was an IEP meeting at the end of the 60-day trial placement, I may have confused folks when I said, you know, that the stay put clause would go into effect. If there was still disagreement, whether it was the school district or the academy staff or the family that was in disagreement, what would go into effect is the stay put clause that says you'll go to mediation, you'll go to conciliation, you'll go through the special ed process until a decision is made. And so the stay put clause just means that that 60-day placement, the child will stay at the academies until this is resolved.
Follow-up, Representative Peterson.
Just a follow-up. Does that say that in this language? I mean, I think it's a little unclear. I didn't read it that way at all. So I think if you're going to rewrite or look at that, I think that should be clarified so that everybody knows what happens at the end of the 60 days. And it does give me some... I'm sad that 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 there isn't those satisfactory agreements, and so is that in a lot of places that you get into the IEPs difficulties in resolving where the child should go?
Yes.
Ms. Mitchell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, and I'll be brief, but want to explain a little bit about the least restrictive environment in special education and what that means. And the way the federal special education process, least restrictive environment language, when we talk about placement in special education, it really is where the program occurs. And the least restrictive is a regular classroom with non-handicapped peers. It's the location of the program. The most restrictive means the child has to go out of district, maybe living in a residential setting, which is what the academies are. Now, to talk specifically about what a least restrictive environment might be for a deaf child, we have everybody on campus, all of the staff, including maintenance and nutrition and health services and everybody who use American Sign Language, who are required by their positions to use sign language, which means that a deaf child at the state academies has 24-hour access to communication. They know what's going on all the time because people are signing and they can interact with everybody. So for that deaf child, the academies really is the least restrictive environment for learning. For deaf children and for blind children, the academies exist because that's what we're trying to do, is give children who are blind and children who are deaf the same kind of access to information as sighted and hearing children have in public education. So we consider that the least restrictive environment, even though for children to get to the academies, they really have to fail in the public school classroom, they have to fail in a special classroom, they have to have all these other services, and then it's like, ooh, well, maybe they're not making it here. Unfortunately, that is what happens. We don't have most of our children coming to us on grade level. Those that we do really are those who may be what we would call culturally deaf. Their parents are deaf, their grandparents are deaf. They've gone to center schools for the deaf for all of their lives, and so there's an expectation that they will as well. Those kids are more than likely on grade level. So for them, it's very natural to consider the academies for placement. Before, when you'd ask why would a school district not necessarily choose the academies, and I want to explain this because we work with school districts all the time and we're not trying to bash schools and their programs. Part of it may be financial, although we try to be as cost neutral as possible. Right now, the basic aid revenue for any children that come to the academies comes with the child. It goes back to the state treasury, but a school district would lose the about $5,000 per pupil aid. They don't lose the categorical aid. They can still count those kids for levies, etc., but they lose the basic aid revenue, and they do pay the special ed transportation. So there is a financial cost. There is the possibility that large districts already have their own program. So they see what they have to offer as good enough, and they don't see a need for a child to leave the district and go to the academies. The last piece may be philosophical, but I did want to comment about this because we already have a charter school for the deaf that uses sign language and a charter school for the deaf that is oral. And parents do have access to those schools, even though they can't access the academies unless the school district agrees with them. So right now, the playing field isn't level for everybody.
Quick follow-up, Representative Peterson.
No, I think she answered my question in terms of finance. So the only thing, the only additional cost, only cost for the district would be the $5,000 per pupil.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's no additional placement cost for the residential or anything. Okay. But I do think that IEP needs to be clarified in here.
Representative Fritz, it is my understanding that you would like to work with Representative Mariani on some language here, and we will lay this bill over for a future date. And we will take further, members of the audience will take further testimony on that date. So with that, the chair lays the bill over for future consideration.
Thank you, members.
Now we'd like to call up Representative Norton on House File 3115.
And Mr. Chair, if I could have Representative Detmer join me.
Absolutely. Welcome, Representative Detmer. And Representative Norton, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the House file number in front of me. House file 2910 for consideration, I guess, to pass to K-12 finance.
I have 3115.
Okay. You're correct. It is 3115.
What's the number here?
So Representative Morton moves that House File 3115 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the K-12 Finance Division. And I see you have an author's amendment.
I do. I have an author's amendment that will need a little bit of oral adjustment, if you will.
All right, members, that is the A1 amendment. You should have it in your folders.
And if I could...
You have an oral amendment to that amendment?
I do have an oral amendment. On line 1.5, if we could take out the word must and put in the word may. The same on line 111, must to may. Line 112, that earlier school year should be an earlier school year.
So you'd like to incorporate may into your...
Yes, Mr. Chair. And those same changes are repeated in the back page on line 312, 318, and 319. So they're the exact same changes in another part of the amendment.
So 312.
And I can.
312, 318.
And 319.
And 319.
May, and Ann.
With that, would you like to move the amendment and the.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Oral incorporations.
Move the A1 amendment with its oral adjustments. Sounds like a gentle term.
This gets the bill in the shape the author intends. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Norton, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for bearing with us for those adjustments. I'm speaking on behalf of those who worked over the interim on the Childhood Obesity Working Group. We had a very active group that met throughout the late summer and fall, and I'm bringing this bill to you for your consideration and for passage. For those who attended the January 19th special hearing of the K-12 Education Policy Committee and the Healthcare and Human Services Policy Committee, you may recall that Representative Detmer, Senator Bonhoff, and I presented a list of recommendations to combat childhood obesity, which creates a more active and healthy lifestyle for kids within the school environment. There were 14 recommendations on that day that we highlighted. This particular bill incorporates a number of those, but not all of them. Understanding the realities of the 2010 legislative session, legislators endorsed recommendations that are evidence-based, that contained little to no fiscal impact unless there are savings or new dollar opportunities, and we'll talk about those in a moment, and was free of unfunded mandates. While some recommendations are traveling separately, and those are the farm-to-table week resolution that we're working with the governor's office to implement, and also a complete streets, which Representative Obermuller is carrying through a different pathway, House File 3115 covers some of the physical education, physical activity, and nutrition recommendations from that working group. The primary piece of this legislation is the adoption of statewide physical education standards. These standards are based on the current national physical education standards and are currently in use in one form or another by more than 87% of the school districts around the state. Even though a vast majority of school districts already follow these national standards, we want to give school districts ample time to prepare for these standards and have set an effective date 2 years out, and that was the amendment that we adopted. We're asking in that amendment that school districts, as part of their curriculum review cycle, consider implementing the standards at that time or by 2012-2013. But you should know that each year that Minnesota does not have statewide standards for physical education, that Minnesota is losing the potential of millions of dollars in federal PE grant funds to create and expand or enhance PE programs or after-school programs. The bottom line is that we need these statewide standards to help our schools access federal funds. You'll also see in the bill a standards option section. In an effort to avoid a fiscal note, we're working with the Department of Education to address the rulemaking cost and hope to have a solution when this bill is heard in the Finance Division. And I do just want to say that as part of our obesity, childhood obesity working group, we worked very closely with the Department of Education, the Department of Health, Department of the Governor's Office, had staff that sat in on many of these, as well as many, many stakeholders, including Minnesota school boards. We've touched base with them and some of the other advocacy groups. The second item is requiring school districts to post their wellness policies on the school district website. In working with the School Board Association, you'll notice that we leave a little bit of flexibility so that the school district, should they not have a website, wouldn't be under the obligation to develop one just for this. The third item is recess guidelines. The bill encourages but not mandates the department to develop guidelines that can assist schools in creating a more structured recess that includes more students, increases their activity levels, and social skills, and decreases behavior activities. And some of you may not have been up at the crack of dawn this morning and read your email, but I did forward to you a brand new study, a Gallup survey of principles for school recess that I forward to all of you electronically, and it has recommendations in there, and I was pleased to see that their recommendations align very well with the contents of our bill. The last part of House File 3115 is data collection. We've worked with the Department of Education to ask school districts via the Common Course Catalog if they offer physical education classes, if they require physical education classes for graduation, and the type of physical education standards that they're following. This will allow the state to better track and share what is working in physical education and what is not. And we were pleased when working with the department to find out that they are in the process of doing some of this anyway, and they were an active part of that discussion this summer. Finally, you see the Healthy Kids Awards program that's proposed in this legislation. What we're trying to do is encourage innovative school programs that rewards schools and students for creative ways to increase healthier eating and more physical activity before, during, and after school. Outside funds would be used to pay for the rewards program instead of asking the department to pay for it. There's still some details to be worked out. There is a Governor's Fit program that the Department of Health has been implementing, though not well advertised, and we're perhaps going to work and combine these programs in the future. So I think I'll let Representative Detmer make a few comments and then be happy to stand for any questions.
Representative Detmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. And yes, I was up at a dawn today on my elliptical machine, and I was sitting there trying to figure out how I could make this more personal to the committee members. And first of all, how many committee members do have a personal fitness program that they abide by?
Yes.
So I'm on my elliptical machine, and I started thinking about what this bill is going to do for school districts. And it'd be like somebody coming to you and say, hey, I've got a good physical fitness program for you, and all you need to do is adopt it, and that would then you would be able to apply for some grant money to help buy more fitness equipment for you. And that so kind of keep that in the back of your minds when we're talking about what we're trying to do for schools. And I think you know that I've been working on this for a couple years, and we've taken the mandates away, allowing school districts to adopt these standards. And I think now we can have all school districts around the state to be able to adopt our fitness standards that that many school districts around the country have. I know this is a policy committee. I had the opportunity to serve on this policy my first term. And but if you take a look at that handout that you have and that put out by the U.S. Department of Education, Kara White's physical education program, everybody should have that copy. And now look at the amount of federal dollars that our school districts use to receive when they have statewide physical education standards. After 2003, that's when our state decided to eliminate the PE policy, the physical education policy. The number of grants to our school districts began to decline to a point where Minnesota did not receive any funds in 2006 or in 2009. But 47 states, including our neighboring states, continue to qualify for these funds. And in 2008, North Dakota received more than $1 million, and South Dakota just $500,000, and Wisconsin, just to our east, received $3.6 million. So when economic times are lean and for our schools, which we all can agree, let's not deny them the opportunity to
to apply for these grants. So with that, thank you. And by the way, there was a lot of work went into the committees that we, the working groups that we did this summer, and I thought it was a neat experience for me to work with Representative Norton here, put a lot of work in, and also the Heart Association, the people that really feel that it's important for our school districts to bring these standards in so that these districts have a choice to apply for these grants. Thank you.
Representative Norton.
Yes, no, if I could just wrap up my comments by saying, you know, what we're asking is to put back in statute what we had years ago, which was standards for physical education in our schools. What we don't have in this bill, and what we've worked very hard over the interim to try to come to compromise on, is we don't have graduation requirements in here. And as you remember, for the last many years, that was something, and I think many of us still feel strongly that they should be in there. But given the times, the economics and the kind of unfunded mandate mentality that we've had, we chose to not put those graduation requirements in the bill. So we do hope that in the spirit of compromise, we can continue to have the support. This bill passed out of this committee and has worked its way along over the years, but because of the grad requirements last year, we did hit a roadblock, and we hope we've overcome that.
And you do have a couple of testifiers with you today. If they would like to proceed, please state your name for the record, and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Callanan. I'm Senior Advocacy Director at the American Heart Association. And I first just want to thank Representative Norton and Representative Detmer for leading the Childhood Obesity Working Group over the interim. It was, as Representative Detmer said, a lot of work, and a lot of members in both the House and Senate contributed a lot of time and energy to that work. And I think the hope that came out of that is that we know that this mounting decades-long building problem of obesity and childhood obesity is not going to be solved in one legislative session, that it is going to take time to tackle this. So with that, I want to focus on three very quick points with you this morning. House File 3115 is a win for schools, it's a win for teachers, and it's a win for students, and here's why. First, the bill's a win for schools because we know that improving physical fitness and quality physical education improves academic achievement. Scientists now understand the connection between physical activity and brain chemistry, and increased blood flow during aerobic exercise improves brain function. Dr. John Rady, the author of the book Spark, was here last year to speak with you about that at length, so I don't need to go into that, but the research is there that the impact on academic achievement has been proved. In Massachusetts, there was a study that found students with higher fitness levels were much more likely to pass their standardized tests in both math and English. In sum, if we want to improve kids' test scores, improving their physical fitness and offering them quality physical education are very important strategies to pursue. Second point, this is a win for teachers. There's also been much research done that kids who are allowed to have quality, vigorous physical activity behave better in school. And this is common sense for any parent or teacher that is around kids. If kids get the chance to get their wiggles out, they are more ready to learn, they are more ready to concentrate, and the studies have borne this out. My third point focuses on the kids. This bill is a win for the kids, ultimately. We can all recite the stats about childhood obesity, the impact of obesity on our health, and, you know, frequency of participation in quality physical education and other physical activity does have a direct impact on whether children are going to be obese or overweight adults. So now is the time to be working with our kids to address that. So it's also obesity is a very costly issue for our state. In 2010, $1 billion in additional health-related costs related to obesity was experienced, and then in 2020, it's anticipated that $3.7 billion in additional costs will be related to obesity. So it is very costly to our state, it's costly to our kids, and we can do something about it this year. It's a simple step forward. So I urge you to support House File 3115, and I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
And I believe we have a second testifier, Ms. Parr.
My name is Ms. Liz Parr Smested, and I am a St. Paul school teacher, and I am a proud physical educator. I'm here today as to talk about the importance of physical education. And normally, if we've sat around for a half hour or 45 minutes in a staff meeting, I would have a 10-minute energizer for you. Because research does say that movement really increases that brain matter. I'm really here today to talk about the importance of quality physical education in our school districts to ensure that students get what they really deserve. I'm extremely passionate about what I do for kids. I have the best job in the world. I get to get kids moving around and see the enjoyment of those students. From the easiest of skills to a student who learned how to skip just yesterday and he worked all year on it, to the hardest of skills, teaching a blind student how to rollerblade and go down a ski mountain, is amazing to me and amazing to those students. I get to change lives. Students strive to do their best and accomplish their goals. I did better in school with sports and physical education. If you think back, you probably did better also. I know my own kids do better at school with physical education and sports, and they would be very unhappy if they didn't have it in their school district. I do more than just physical education, as most physical educators do. I integrate math, reading, writing, and yes, I even have kids singing songs in class that relate to exercise and movement. And they go out of my classroom singing those songs. It's in their heads. Just the other day, I had a principal singing a song and said, I just can't get that out of my head. They take that home with them. I did want to give you one example. I just finished an Olympic lesson plan and unit in my school. And it was a school-wide event where students were part of one of six countries. They learned about flags. They learned about geography. We're doing math graphing now with the medals that they earned. They learned all of the Olympic sports. I even had one student come up to a teacher in the morning and say, you know what, I'm late to school. And he was very late. But he said, I had to come to school to represent my country in the gym. That was amazing. We do more than just physical education. At my school, we started an around-the-world running program at recess where students run, and we track how far they have run around the world. We are doing more with less. We can only continue with rigorous physical education programs that have high expectations for students with state standards. Let's not continue to be one of the three states without physical education standards. Let's continue to be a state that others look to as having high-quality education that encompasses a well-rounded student. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you to the testifiers, and now we'll take questions from members. Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I mostly have a comment. I just wanted to say thank you very much for bringing this forward. You know, as we've really seen the shrinking of the school day, taking out recesses, taking out things that seem like they're not book learning, we really, I think, doing a disservice to our kids, and I really applaud that effort. I got two teenage boys at home who would much rather sit in front of their Xbox, and they exercise by moving their thumbs, and that's, it looks like maybe I do that too. I recognize the importance of instilling in our kids the importance of getting out and moving around. I did have one question on the amendment, though, just to clarify. There's the amendment deletes subdivision 3 on page 3. There's actually two subdivision 3s on that page, and it is the report we're taking out and not the little commissioner shall seek outside funding. Is that correct?
Representative Norton.
Could I ask for clarification, or perhaps Ms. Larson can address this? Does she help the gamer?
3.1.3 versus 3.2.9.
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Obermueller, I have the Senate Council draft here from which our document was prepared. And in their document, here's a reference page 3, delete lines 1 to 3. So I'm assuming it's that report.
Representative Norton?
So I believe that is correct. We are taking out subdivision 3, the report.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Members, also included in your packet are handouts from Ms. Shirley Sunnison, who is a FIED teacher from Minneapolis, who cannot be here because she is teaching. The documents are Lesson for Fitness and Wellness Unit, as well as the national FIED standards that are in your packet. Representative Depke.
That was fast.
Well, this chair likes to move things quickly.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I know that Representative Detmer and Representative Norton are very passionate about this subject, and we did hear this bill, a similar bill last year. I have about three questions. The first one is, am I correct in thinking that the bill differs from last year? Primarily, it is no longer a must. It's a may. Is that taken care of from the amendment that you made initially?
Representative Detmer?
And Representative, right, it's a may, but there's no mandate on credit. There's no mandated credit for graduation as the bill last year was.
Okay. Representative Depke.
Thank you. I have two more questions, if that's all right. The other question that I have is, we have, I think it was testified that about 87% of our school districts already have the state standards in their embedded into their curriculum, and I noticed that we don't have any testimony from the schools or the school superintendents here today. Could you please comment on that?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't have state standards. The schools that are have standards have adopted the national standards, and so we don't, as a state yet, we do not have a state standard. These organizations did come into the summer working group. Some of the people came in.
Representative Depke.
Thank you very much. As the guru for the mandates on schools, I still have a great concern that this could turn into a mandate for our school district. So that's why I asked that question. The last thing that I wanted to ask is, I know that you're going to be working with the Department of Ed. In this committee, we have turned a lot more things over to the Department of Education this year. So I will be very interested to see what the fiscal note would be for them also on this. In these budgetary times, I'm concerned about that as well.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Representative Depke. We did, as you recall, we had this bill with more requirements last year with the graduation requirement, and we had little to no fiscal note last year. So we were anticipating none, but we have been working with the Department of Ed to, and we've got the expedited rulemaking, which should help somewhat. But we will, as we move to a finance committee, get affirmation of a fiscal note at that time. So we have been working with the Department of Ed on that.
Thank you.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is along the lines of some of the issues Representative Depke was raising, but I'm wondering if either anyone from the department or MSBA wants to testify, in both in relation to the standards and in relation to where school administrations are with this proposal.
They certainly come down, as I mentioned before. We have had them as a part of our committee and anticipate having at least a neutral stance, but if Minnesota school boards and the department would like to take a chair.
Welcome. Just please state your name for the record and offer any testimony that you would like.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Stein, and I'm on staff at the Minnesota School Boards Association. And for clarification, we were consulted after the committee talked about this and came up with the recommendations. And I just want to be upfront that Representative Norton, after that fact, has been very upfront with us and worked with us. And she's done a good job in taking our feedback and making it as flexible as it possibly could for school districts. And I will freely admit, based on the amendment that's going on here, I'm not sure what the status is in terms of it's a must or a may. My interpretation, or at least my understanding, is that it's permissive now. If that's the case, then I don't think we have any issues to be concerned about. I think that in a survey that we've done with our school districts last year in terms of course credits, course requirements, and locally adopted standards, we found that all districts have adopted local standards in their Phi Ed and Health, and that 98% of our school districts of those who were surveyed, and that was about 227 of our 337 school districts, currently require at minimum one credit of Phi Ed, many of them requiring two credits of Phi Ed at the high school level. So, you know, I understand the goal is an important one, and childhood obesity is an important one to fix, but I want you also to know that school districts have been doing a lot of good things at the local level with Phi Ed, wellness programs for staff and students, all done based on their local standards and voluntary efforts. And I think we heard the St. Paul teacher talking about those standards as well, and those are great pieces, all done at the local level. And so we don't have any concerns if it's permissive. We think it's a good, positive step. If there are financial rewards for districts with federal grants, state grants, whatever those grants may be, school districts will do those things necessary to make sure that their environment is good for students and staff. So I'll leave it at that and be open for questions.
Mr. Chair, I'm Amy Wallstein, the Government Relations Director for the Department of Education, and I want to thank the authors and the Obesity Work Group for their work on this legislation. They put a lot of time over the interim into investigating what could be done and ways that we can address obesity in schools. The department has been involved in providing feedback both to the working group and to the authors as this legislation has been developed. We consulted with them on how to what the federal grant requirements would be in terms of standards and what standards process for Minnesota, how we could integrate that together so that we could have so that what we were doing on the state level would qualify districts for the federal grant money. And so we are working on the fiscal note at this point, and we will have that ready for the Finance Committee when the legislation is at that point.
Thank you. Any additional questions from members? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Norton, and to your testifiers. I'm kind of struggling through with some of the language on page 3, and I think I might have a pretty simple way to deal with this. You've got a notwithstanding language on 3.4, which references a clause in statute that basically says that in our standards development, we should be clear, concise, objective, and measurable, and grade level appropriate. I don't think you want to have language that says notwithstanding that, and I think
Mr. Chair, could you please repeat the line that you were on? 3.4.
Are you on the A1 amendment,
Mr. Chair? No, and Representative Norton, I'm on the original bill.
You're on the original bill,
and it's page 3,
yeah,
subdivision 4.
And so, Mr. Chair, were you suggesting that the term notwithstanding, the word notwithstanding, be removed?
Well, Mr. Ripson Norton, I think you don't need that first sentence at all, unless perhaps you did something like notwithstanding any other law, any other law to the contrary, because as you look at the reference in statute, there's really good language there that I don't think meets your intent about us not wanting to be clear, not wanting to be concise, not wanting to be at grade level appropriateness. So I think you're kind of biting more mischief than you really want here. And I think I know what you're trying to do in terms of, you know, making sure that we can move toward alignment with some good national standards here. But I think this is an overreach in terms of the language, and I don't think it really meets your intent. And so I would suggest either you drop an entire sentence or have something that says, notwithstanding other law to the contrary.
Mr. Chair, we have notwithstanding other laws to the contrary, other law to the contrary.
And then pick up at the commissioner. And I'll move that if that doesn't cause you any...
So the department may want to comment on this.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, what we had advised was that there be some reference to the, I might flub up the statute sites here, but there's a revision cycle and a benchmark statute. I believe it's 120B023 and a 120B021. Those are the ones that we were trying to address with the notwithstanding clause. And I think we may be picking that up with any additional statutory criteria reviewed, required when reviewing or revising standards and benchmarks in 3.5 and 3.6.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment, the A1 amendment, addresses that. Because if you look at 1.14 of the A1 amendment, you see that we've gone and we've amended 120B023 subdivision 2, okay, which establishes the cycle for revising and reviewing not only state standards but local standards as well. And since the intent of this bill is to ultimately have state standards, and we had reference to physical education in the context of local standards, we amended that. In addition, we created a paragraph H that directs the commissioner to use the good cause exemption, which is even less rulemaking than expedited rulemaking, and applies only when there are ministerial changes to be made. So since you are adopting essentially the national standards as the state standards, and you are relying on the national standards to guide and inform any changes, what this would do is direct the commissioner at such times as the national standards are changed to use the good cause exemption to simply perform a ministerial task of aligning the state language with whatever those national standards are. So I think that addresses your concern about that cycle.
Right.
As I understand it then, you would use the expedited rulemaking to initially adopt those physical education standards, but any revisions or reviews which would come subsequent to 2012-2013 when these standards are adopted would be through the good cause exemption.
Mr. Chair, Lisa Larson, Ms. Larson, that's exactly what I was seeking clarification on, so thank you very much for that. That was very good work.
So right now we are on the oral amendment that, and I will...
Well, but when I make it, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it sounds like Representative Norton, I just want to make sure you're comfortable. I don't want to do harm to the intent of your bill, but I would suggest that the amendment be that on line 3.4, we strike the language notwithstanding, well, actually, keep notwithstanding, strike the language that starts with Minnesota, and strike that language all the way out to line 3.6, benchmarks. And then insert, after the word notwithstanding on line 3.4, other laws to the contrary, comma, and then we need another minor adjustment here, is that?
Initially, because we want a different rulemaking process for the
changes. Okay. And then on line 3.7, after the word shall, insert initially. So it would read, notwithstanding other laws to the contrary, the Commissioner of Education shall initially adopt.
Representative Norton, any comments on that?
No, I think we'd be happy with that. Thank you.
Discussion from members. All those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Abler.
Thanks, and I just wanted to say this as a supporter of the concept, and I'm going to vote for the bill today. But I want to caution us as we go down this road to get free federal money for worthy causes. There's a bunch of us who think we don't like all the federal strings that come with the free money we've gotten in the past. And so as this goes forward, you know, I just want to caution you about that. Minnesota is a leader in the country. And somehow I wish there'd be a way, and I don't know how you get the free money otherwise, if you even need it, to do these grants. But if there's a way that Minnesota could adopt whatever standard they choose at the department level, it happens to be that standard, that'd be great. But I just wanted to bring that up to you. And so Representative Norton should get like the Lifetime Achievement Award for working on this project for so long. And maybe there'll be a little rubber duck or
but
something.
I can retire. At the
end. So but good luck with you.
Thank you, Mr. Abler, Representative Abler. I do appreciate that. And just to remind folks, you don't have to apply for the grants. It's up to the individual schools. And if there are strings, you know, I'm with you. Don't take something on that has strings you don't want.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Before we break loose here. Now, when we leave this room, I don't want to see anybody line up at the elevator.
Uh-oh.
Take the stairs. Take the stairs. Thank you.
Well, yes, as your testifier said, we need to get our wiggles out. So we will definitely do that. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 3115? Please come forward to the microphone. State your name for the record. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samuel Wagner. I'm a resident of Fisher School in Fisher, Minnesota. I come from a very small community. And, every year our sports teams are dwindling. I mean, more students wish to, you know, stay at home, play Xbox, just sit around, be lazy. And I think this is a great idea, trying to promote people to get outside and exercising and get that work ethic back into their lives.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, Representative Norton renews her motion that House File 3115 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Finance with further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Thank you very much.
The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Congratulations, Representative Norton. You're on your way to your lifetime achievement. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.